This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Series 7, Episode 15 of Out with Susie Ruffle. I think this is the 99th episode, which is amazing to me. I'm very, very pleased to still be sharing it from my little tiny box room where it started. I mean, I say box room, it really was a cupboard in those first few series in my little flat in Southeast London, not really knowing who was going to listen to it and sending it out during the lockdown because I needed something to do. And now there's this gorgeous community that listen every week and I really, really appreciate it. So I want to start with a little thanks to you guys for listening and for being so gorgeous. When I meet you after shows, it really means a lot. I met some lovely people in Cardiff this week. That was very special. And also in Newcastle, a couple of people really stand out that said that the podcast really meant something to them. And maybe you know who you are if you're listening to this, and it really meant the world to me, the conversations that we had, so thank you. I feel I need to apologise for my voice, it's slightly croaky. I will let you know that it's 6:30 a.m. I've had quite a busy week, and so I decided to get up before the baby got up this morning and record this, so apologies if I sound a bit croaky. I've been up for about half an hour, but the vocal cords aren't quite awake yet, so apologies for that. Maybe I sound sort of husky and sort of like I do late night jazz radio or something. Anyway, thank you so much for everyone that got in touch after Laura Kay's episode last week. It seems that everyone really enjoyed that and I think she's brilliant. And lots of you have said that you're going to buy her books, which I really recommend. I finished her book Wild Things this week and I loved it. It's a little gorgeous piece of community inside of a book and I just love all that. So it was brilliant. Yeah, I really related to so much of it. So maybe you will too. Okay, let's get on with today's conversation. We have a fantastic episode with the brilliant Anna Richardson. And so I'm very, very excited to share that. This will be the last episode of the series. We're going to have a little break over the summer. And then I'll be back with some new episodes, probably around October time, I think. That's how it usually works. So you'll have a little break. But if you haven't listened to the back catalogue, please do. There's lots of great episodes. Quite often people say to me, oh, I started with all the really famous people and then I went back and listened to the people that aren't famous. And actually, I enjoyed those ones just as much, or I enjoyed the ones that I hadn't heard of people even more because I was learning about their whole story. And so maybe if you're someone that hasn't listened to it all, you might enjoy those over the summer. How can I know? Just maybe. Right. Okay, I've got a couple of gorgeous emails to share and then we'll get on with today's conversation. Hi, Susie. I came to watch your show in Hereford and since have been listening to the podcast, I went back to the start. I've been assumed straight my entire life, although I always felt that I wasn't who I really was. As a child, I wanted nothing more than to fit in. I felt invisible, unwanted, and generally my self-worth was low. As a result, I spent much of my teens and 20s engaging in risky and often abusive relationships with men, chasing validation and ultimately love, but in all the wrong places. Though there were times I would engage in sexual relations with girls, this was often to please men. Or, on one occasion, a girl approached me socially to get my number, and when I showed interest, my friends reacted negatively, suggesting that I was being odd in exchanging numbers, probably because they considered me straight. They are supportive of the LGBTQIA+ community, though. It was just a little different 10 to 15 years ago. To cut a long story short, I met a man and had my daughter, now 4. And when I was pregnant with my son, now 2, he left me in a very traumatic and abusive way. In healing from that trauma and in therapy, revisiting drama from my past and unpicking a lot of the person I thought I needed to be versus the person I am, I find myself completely lost and confused about defining my sexuality and what I want in the future. I find myself attracted to non-binary and trans people as well as men and women. I think that I'm pansexual. It's the definition that I feel fits me best. For me, it's always been about a person's persona, their energy, how they make me feel, regardless of gender. I now, though, find myself at 35, restarting the dating game, in the deep and unsure of where to start. However, your podcast has given me the confidence to engage in LGBTQIA+ network events at work. I attended Hereford Pride this year with the kids and have opened up to a few of my close friends about how I'm feeling. So even though I may be years from having the confidence to date, and the complexity of it feels overwhelming, you've been a great source of comfort listening to others, and the write-ins, I think Duncan's James episode particularly, made me feel like I'm not alone in coming to the scene later in life. Thanks for the light that you're putting into this world and making it a little less scary. I hope the baby's meltdowns over crazy shit is easing. My daughter is getting better. They woke me up at 12 last night because she couldn't make a heart shape with her hands. Now my son is going into a meltdown because his cheese is cubed and not grated. Wish me luck. Two so close in age on my own is pure insanity. And I'm not going to share your name because you haven't told me whether I can or not. And because I'm aware you're still working out how to come out, I won't share that. But I was delighted to receive your email. And there's no right time to come out. Also, 35 is not even late. Don't worry about that. Or no right time to work out exactly who you are. I think that, you know, the older I get and the more queer people that I chat to, I realise it's people are constantly on sort of a sliding scale or finding things later in life, learning things about themselves. And there's no time where you need to be out by. It's not like a race to coming out. Whenever's right for you is right for you. And I hope that you're doing okay. I'm sorry that you had such an awful experience with that relationship and that you're working through your trauma. And I hope that you're getting all the help that you need. And I'm so pleased that this podcast has been a source of friendship or comfort or just information. And I was really delighted to read your email. And thank you for coming to the show. I appreciate that as well. Okay, I have one more email to share. Hello, Susie. I have been a like-minded friend for a couple of years and recently started subscribing to Out. I've now started trailing back to find interviews with some of my very own inspirations, like Alan Carr, Scott Mills, Jess Fostercue, and Joe Lyso, all in the queue waiting for me to listen. If you ever decide you want to do an out with a non-famous person, I would love to share my story. Here it goes. I am currently an out 40-year-old gay man, and I feel like I'm finally living my truest self after coming out in 2019 at the age of 36. My journey has been long, and while I have regrets about not coming out sooner, I cannot change this and have to find a way to accept it. Sometimes, when I'm in a conversation with my partner, friends, or family, there's often a conversation about my coming out. I'm not really sure where to start, or I have ever been ready to fully accept my identity. As a teacher, I've always tried to promote the idea that each individual must be ready to find their own path on their own journey. But ultimately, I have regrets as to why I didn't act sooner. I have an amazingly supportive family, and I think that if I made the decision 10 years earlier, it would have been just as well received. But the point is, I never saw myself in the closet. I just saw myself as someone who wasn't quite sure where they were in life. For 10 years, I worked as a teacher in a faith-based school. There was never any pressure for them not to identify as queer, but I internalized this fear, and for many of those 10 years, I found myself throwing everything into my career. At times, I would work 14 to 15 hour days, 5 days a week, and then fill my weekends with other jobs and roles. Almost a fear that if I had time in my head to stop and think, I might have to face reality. I wasn't ready for it. At the end of the 10 years, I decided to change schools and move to a more diverse and creatively focused college that completely changed my life. Gender-neutral toilets, young people free to explore their identity, a married gay couple as their senior leaders, and all just a few bus stops from the city. Had I been living in a heteronormative bubble for too long? I always thought of myself as accepting and open and comfortable, but suddenly I realised all was not right. I had battled anxiety and depression, body image issues, and the yo-yo of weight and appearance for almost 10 years, and suddenly being exposed to this world, gently nestling next to my career, I realised I had to find a way where both existed together. I slowly started making decisions to make better choices. A huge friendship rift in my early 30s had seen me isolated from multiple hetero couples that I was used to and started spending time with new friends and communities that eventually caused me to open up the apps and start the search for a romantic connection with a man. Saying it out loud was the hardest thing to cope with. There have been flirtations with my queerness throughout my former years, but they sat in a part of my head as denial. As a 20-year-old, I tried a gay sauna in Sydney, but almost ran away because a guy tried to touch my knee. I own two copies of Attitude, one with Will Meller and another with Chris Fountain, hidden amongst my FHM and Empire magazines. I had two or three dalliances with my gay friends, but these were never spoken of again. I had a more serious dalliance with a gay friend on holiday, but was rejected, so that threw me back further into denial. I considered bisexuality might have been part of my identity in my early 20s, but felt ashamed of my use of this very quickly, as it felt untrue. I had three girlfriends in my 20s, and only one was I able to seal the deal with. I think I always knew that heterosexuality was not going to be my pathway, but what else could I do? I felt that I had to follow the expectations of my friendship circles. However, 2018 was the start to find my true identity. The dating world was vicious. Explaining that you're 25 and newly out was not easy. I fell in love too quickly after just one date, and I still felt I had to hide my true self from all around me. However, things had to change, and these changes came thick and fast. First, I came out to my closest friends and sisters in 2018. Then more explicitly became more comfortable with dating in public, attending pride events, and then I got in my first serious relationship in 2019. This came as a crossroads, as I decided to leave my teaching career to explore more of my identity and accept the fact that my obsession with my career developments was limiting me. During my leaving speech in 2019, I epically came out, mic drop moment, and it was received with whoops and cheers from my colleagues who could truly see how happy I was fitting into my own skin at last. The next day I came out to my mum, still with the fear about my dad. He's from a certain time period, I think we all say. I asked her to tell him. I felt ashamed of this, and he was of course hurt initially, but they have both been brilliant since. From there, it was a beautiful journey of self-discovery and acceptance, on my terms and on my own route. It's obviously not all been plain sailing. My first relationship broke down during the first lockdown when I realised my new identity had been a bit of a vulnerability and my ex had used this as a controlling mechanism. I realised the level of manipulation during April 2020 after quite a toxic FaceTime. I found the strength to end it shortly afterwards and enter the world of dating again. 37 years old, a little more comfortable in my skin and not having to hide a thing. So where am I now? In a loving relationship of 2 years with a man who fully accepts me for who I am and my journey. He moved in last August and I can see our future together very clearly and I'm happy. I love him so much and I have never had a doubt. I found my community. Joining a random gay men WhatsApp group from an Instagram gay in December 2020 turned out to be the absolute lifesaver during the second lockdown. That group streamlined and formed a little global community where between 30 and 40 of us who all still communicate and meet up and go to festivals together. This is the group where I met my partner. We both owe so much to our very foundations of our friends from that group, and I wish I could name them all here, but I haven't got time. My time of teaching was rewarding, and I returned to teaching just as the lockdowns were coming to a close. I felt more accepted and had the inner strength to say no when my workload seemed too high. I'm just finishing a temporary contract in a faith-based school where I know I am loved, I am seen, and I can be myself without any fear. I start a new school in September where I can see myself settling and being focused for the next few years. I am prouder than I've ever been. Although I can't make up for the 16 to 18 years where I was not truly myself, I believe everything happens for a reason. Listening to you and your guests reassures me and inspires me to keep sharing my story, as no one person's story is the same. Thank you, Susie, and thank you for what you're doing. And that is from G. I thought those two emails worked beautifully together because this second one, obviously, G has experienced a whole myriad of things in just his short time of being out, but it's got such a happy ending and that he's in love and he's got a better workload and he's about to start a new job where he feels like he can be himself. And so I thought it would be lovely to end on one that was so hopeful. And I'm so delighted that this podcast has been that for you. And maybe the first person who emailed in, who I also didn't name, hopefully this second email is a little source of joy and hope to you, because it's never too late. It's never, ever too late. Okay, let's get on with today's conversation. Apologies once again for my croaky voice. I hope that you don't mind too much. In the conversation, it was midday and I'd had a coffee, so it's much, much better. It's a brilliant conversation with Anna Richardson. I really hope that you enjoy it. Oh, hi, listener. I'm very excited for today's conversation. It is with Anna Richardson, who I'm sure you'll be aware, she is an award-winning presenter, producer and journalist with over 20 years experience at the heart of British broadcasting. Now, you will know her from The Big Breakfast, Sex Education Show, Super Size versus Super Skinny, Naked Attraction and many, many more. As a presenter, I always find her interested, always kind and always honest, brave enough to take on subjects and stories that most others would fear. And I am delighted to be talking to her today. Hello, Anna.
Hello, you. What a lovely intro. Thank you so much, Susie. What
a lovely thing to say. It's true. I think that you do, because I always do a bit of research when people come on the show and I've been watching back different things that you've done and watched a few bits on YouTube from forever ago.
Oh my God.
You don't look any different.
Correct. And that is Botox for you, darling. Long may it rain.
But I think that's the thing, that is, you're very good at being non-judgmental, which I think is, because I think sometimes you watch people do things and they're trying to be non-judgmental, but you can sort of see maybe in the back of their,
yeah,
somewhere in their brain, they're having a judgment. But I think you're very good at being an open book.
So do you think it's that with some people, you can see that they're not being authentic? They're not being their authentic,
yeah,
selves.
Or they're wincing slightly.
Exactly. So do you know what? That's very kind. So thank you for that. I think I've talked about this a little bit before. I was brought up in a vicarage. So my dad's a vicar.
And in an actual vicarage?
In an actual vicarage.
Like the little house next to a church?
100%.
A really old one?
A really old vicarage.
Was it haunted?
Well, the church was haunted. So, and I'm very, very sensitive to that. I mean, we're going to go off on a whole different thing.
No, that's fine. Welcome
I'm
to
very sensitive.
Ghosts with Susie Ruffle.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I'm very, very sensitive about all of that, because where I was brought up was in a place called, well, actually we lived all over the place, but in a place called Nantwich in Cheshire.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And the church is very famous. It's a medieval church. Mm. And the house, the rectory, is built in the graveyard, basically. So when me and my brothers were kids and we were digging around and playing in the garden.
Oh, no, digging?
Yeah, we'd dig up dead bodies.
No.
Not like recent dead bodies, but we would dig up people like plague bones. So the graveyard was clearly on our garden. And we'd go to Dad going, Dad, got another jawbone, or Dad, got another leg. And he'd be like, okay, kids, I'm going to have to go and bury these again. So yeah, I mean, my childhood was quite sort of
now,
odd.
Now, of course you don't care about looking at dicks on Naked Attraction.
Exactly.
You were digging up bones as a child.
I was digging up heads. So with my childhood, it was a very, very open house. So when your father's a priest and you're brought up in a vicarage, it literally is an open house. So the doorbell would go and there'd either be the bishop standing there, or it might be, you know,
great hats, bishops.
Exactly.
The best hats, I'd say.
Incredible hats. And they always wear the entire thing.
Do they?
Absolutely. It's always massive, massive hats. You
all
know, the
robes.
Whole garb, all the robes, that whole scepter thing.
The whole thing.
It's all they ever wear.
Oh, I love it.
So they would turn up at the front door.
They'd knock on the door with the scepter.
That's it. That's
you may
it.
Enter.
Exactly. Like Black Rod.
Yeah, exactly.
So it'd either be the bishop, or there would be like a homeless person, or a drug addict, or a couple wanted to get married, or a bereaved couple. So you got very used to, as a child, welcoming everybody into your space. So I think that was the best kind of training ground for me, just going, I accept you, whoever you are, and I'm interested in your story.
That's so brilliant, because I was, and that ignorantly of me, I sort of thought, oh, because your dad was he a canon?
He is, yes, he is a canon, yeah.
So, and that's C of E, isn't it, Anglican?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. So part of me wondered whether actually it was sort of quite sheltered in a way, in the way that I guess lots of people that maybe go to church a lot, so people that I've had on the show before where they've talked about, oh God, no, we wouldn't talk about this, we wouldn't talk about that. But I suppose if you're actually in the house where you have to be open to everyone, it's a different experience.
Yes, but there is a real contradiction there, because even though the household was very open and we were very exposed to different people within the parish, as a family, we were very closed.
Mm.
So there were a lot of secrets, a lot of lies, a lot of, we don't talk about that.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of, perhaps a little bit of dysfunction growing up within our family. So it was very outward looking. It was very, we have to attend to the people within the parish. And I think that then meant that there might have been a little bit of not taking care perhaps, of what was going on at home. And I mean, that led ultimately to my parents splitting up when I was 10. And then our family fractured when I was that age, because I was sent to boarding school. My older brother was sent to boarding school, but my little brother remained with my dad. So very, very suddenly we had this kind of implosion, yeah, of a family.
So little Anna, how religious were, you know, I don't know how religious you are now, but what's that like growing up where it's like, well, this is a given that this is how we as a family...
I think it made me really curious.
Yeah.
It made me very respectful and accepting of religion, which I still am now. I wouldn't consider myself to be a religious person. I'm very much a spiritual person, very much a spiritual person. But I respect that religion gives us a framework, a very important framework for a lot of people, actually.
Yeah.
And I still will go to church if I feel that urge to. So it's not often, but occasionally I feel that pull to go to church because I feel the need to, if you like, respect or honour something more than me. And I find it very comforting.
And I suppose that's sort of an indication of like a time before for you.
Yes.
As well, like, I guess, a safety, a home, you know, and there's something about the sort of, in really good churches where someone really cares about, I don't mean how much money they've got or how big it is, but I mean when you can tell that it's really loved by the people, this, you can sort of tell that when you walk in, can't you?
Exactly. So I think you're right. There is, maybe it is a search for sort of family or acceptance or a safety. I think you're absolutely right, but I feel very comfortable in a church environment. And it maybe is harking back to my childhood and a safety. But yeah, I feel very at home there.
And so when you were 10 and you went off to boarding school, what was that like?
Really difficult.
Yeah, because I sort of find the idea of that quite scary.
It was very, very difficult because obviously it was a time of trauma and change at home. So, you know, my mum and dad split up. My siblings and I were you know, completely fractured and sent away to different places. Yeah. So it was trauma. It was traumatic.
Yeah, of course.
But it's absolutely shaped me and who I am as a person. So sort of 10-year-old me got dispatched off to an all-girls boarding school. And I remember very clearly on night one being left with my wooden trunk and, you know, my parents sort of disappearing off down, you know, down the lane. And I can remember sitting there and thinking, okay, you know, I mean, it was sort of like prisoner cell block age and sitting there thinking, you're either going to sink or you're going to swim. And I've got to swim. And I remember making that choice very clearly when I was 10. So it's been the making of me.
Yeah. So what did that look like then? Like getting involved?
It looked like actually defending myself. And I'm still very much like that as a person. So you and I have talked before about what anxiety looks like for people, how you do your anxiety.
Yes.
And you either do your anxiety by fight, flight, where you, you know, you abandon, or freeze, where you just absolutely freeze in your anxiety and you can't do anything and you become totally static. So for me, I'm a fighter and also a little bit of a fleer. But certainly when I was 10, I couldn't flee boarding school.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't get around.
So for me, it was, I'm a fighter. So not a physical fighter, but in terms of, you want to try it? Fine, you try it. And actually that meant that I was then left alone. So, and I was very popular at school actually. So maybe a little bit like you, I learned as well. So that I was the gobshite. I was the one that was like, you want to take me on? Fine, let's take me on. But I was also the sort of the funny gobshite that became popular by having a bit of a laugh with the girls. So that was my survival technique.
Yeah, I definitely, I wasn't popular at school, but being funny was the thing that got me out of a lot of trouble.
Of course.
Because it would be how I deflected everything.
Of course, it's your safety zone. It's your way of being accepted.
And control. And
of course. So all of that makes sense to me. That whole, I'm going to perform and I'm going to kick off or perform because it's a way of controlling the situation and feeling safe within an unsafe, chaotic environment.
And were you a performer?
With my friend, I suppose I was certainly in the classroom and with my mates. I've always been, you know, I'm up for a laugh. I'm up for the party. I wanted to go into the school play, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, in case anybody wants to know.
Who did you play?
I played Peter. So even then,
sure,
it's kind of like, obviously I played a boy. Even though I've got massive tits, it was kind of like, sort of, you know, clearly shouldn't have been playing a teenage boy, but I played Peter in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. So yeah, I suppose I was a bit of a performer. maybe. Mm. But I also was quite academic. So it was important to me that I was learning and that I was getting the grades that I needed. That was very much drilled into us as children at home. It's like, you know, we're paying for your education. It's really important.
Right.
You will go to university. You will do well in your life academically. So it was important to me to be a square academically, but then basically get, you know, expelled for being bad.
Was your mum a school teacher as well?
Yes.
So that must have added to that.
Totally. And again, thinking about my parents, you know, they came from a very working class background. But both of them went to university.
Right.
Exactly. So think about that. I guess in the, must have been sort of maybe early 60s. So
that's huge, because the generation after, and then even more the generation after that, which is sort of between you and I guess.
Yes.
Where it became very normal for people of working class background, you know, sort of in the Tony Blair years when everyone could go. But I guess in the 60s, that would have been quite rare.
Certainly for my mum, if you think about for women.
For women, yeah, huge.
So for my mother to go to university, and her sister did as well, I believe. But yeah, I'm hugely grateful to both my parents that they put a big emphasis on education. Mm. And I was fortunate enough to get a really good education. So, you know, I look back and I'm very grateful to them for that.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Obviously, we talk about coming out and being out. And I know I said to you, which I always ask people before they come on the show, just so I don't make any assumptions, but I said, oh, how do you identify? And you said, well, I just identify as me, which I love. But tell me how you feel about labels, because the reason I ask this is because quite often, and certainly for myself, it was during those secondary school years that I first became aware of that I felt differently about the girls than what some of my other friends felt. I had a lot of very intense female friendships.
Yes.
Where I was sort of in love with them.
Yeah.
But they had boyfriends, which I found utterly devastating. But talk to me a little bit about how you feel about labels, and then...
Okay. So, I mean, I've talked quite a lot about this, so people may well have heard me say this before, but I identify...
That's okay.
I identify as me. Mm-hmm. I'm just Anna. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't like labels. Mm-hmm. I think I respect the fact that they can be very useful, mm-hmm. but for me, I find them a hindrance. However, as somebody pointed out to me recently, of course, your biggest label is your name. Mm. So actually, our label, that primary label, is so, so crucial. Mm. But I identify as me. And maybe that is to do with, again, when I was younger, I was always on the outside. When you're a vicar's child, you're on the outside because you're poor, but you're part of the establishment. You're poor, but you're respected,
right.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because the vicar, the priest within a community, especially if you're in a very sort of tight town or a tight village, certainly in the 70s and the 80s, you know, the priest, the vicar was very respected. You know,
oh, yeah.
My mother's an RE teacher. So it's a very respected profession.
Yes.
But we had no money. So I was always on the outside. And then when I was sent to boarding school, you know, I was sent on a bursary, basically. My parents couldn't afford to send me. So again, you're the kid that couldn't afford the school uniform. So wearing a secondhand school uniform, but in a posh school. So I've always been othered. And I kind of accept that I'm slightly different from other kids, if you like. And like you, I had some huge crushes on girls at school, some very intense friendships. And I guess that, yeah, maybe I was in love with some of the girls at school because you're living cheek by jowl 24 hours a day.
Yeah, so massively boarding school. That must be very...
You're literally in the next bed to, you know, to the girls in your dorm. So I think I probably did fall in love with some of my friends at school, but I've never identified as being lesbian or straight or whatever it happens to be. I'm just me, and I've had both lesbian and straight relationships. So yeah, I just think you fall in love with who you fall in love with.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure loads of people will really relate to that. Because I think that it's, as you say, I think labels can be useful, and there's certainly a time when they've been enormously useful. We're talking about, you know, fighting for rights and different things like that. But, you know, as language is changing, as our lexicon is changing about how we identify, I think that it's important to also be able to say to people, it's okay if you don't feel like any of these names suit you. That's okay.
Yeah, everything you've just said there, I completely agree with. Of course, labels have been important in the past in terms of our rights.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, however we choose to talk about that, it could be feminism, it, you know, it could be trans rights, it could be LGBTQI, you know, whatever. But certainly for me, as I've got older, I now choose not to label myself.
And I think that's fine. I think that that's, well, not that you need my approval, but I, you know, I think that labels can also be quite constricting.
Yeah.
I think for some people, you get a label and you go, oh, I feel a bit relieved. But actually, I've spoken to other people and to friends where they go, oh, it feels too much pressure to be a specific thing, because what about if I change?
Well, exactly. And I think maybe that's what I've struggled with a bit, because certainly, so I was around growing up, quite a few gay people, actually, and certainly within the church, and also within my wider family and the community, basically, you know, the congregation.
Oh, so you're talking about when you were a child, or when you were... Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were aware of gay people?
Yeah, yeah, I was. And again, you know, our household was very, very open. So I was very aware of that and very accepting of it. But I found that in my own experience of... When I left my partner and I met Sue Perkins and started a relationship with Sue. So I left a straight relationship to go into a lesbian relationship with Sue. And the attitude that I had from a lot of people going, they found it funny that it was kind of like, oh my God, what? You're now with a girl? Oh, that's hilarious. And it was like, well, no, it's not. Hilarious. Not hilarious. Why is it funny? So I found that very confusing.
Yeah, and also that's really diminishing of your experience, like the idea that it's like, oh my God, like I don't know where to look. It's like,
yes,
like it's sort of doing that thing that I hate that often happens to women who have relationships with other women, where it's seen as sort of a bit of a kink or like a bit of a hot, like a, oh, you're doing this, like it's a,
yeah,
and then it totally takes away the fact that you've fallen in love with a person.
Exactly. So for me, it was a case of we fell in love with each other. I fell in love with a woman. I fell in love with a person. And, you know, she was and is and will always be extraordinary. So I fell in love. And I found it incredibly difficult, the people that found that funny. And then, of course, you get the, which you'll know, the whole thing of, well, what do you do in bed?
Oh.
And what do you do in bed? And you've been with a guy all this time, so you're missing cock, all that kind
God.
Of thing.
Was that from like friends?
Just kind of, yeah, and to everyone. I mean, I'm a very open person.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's just, and do you know what? I don't, in a way, I don't blame people for having that natural curiosity, because it is a natural curiosity
yeah.
to go, well, what do you do? And especially if you've been with a guy. But then the reverse has happened. You know, Sue and I are no longer together, and I've met a guy that I'm with now. So then the reverse happened, which is like, well, you're with a guy. Oh my God. Well, what do you guys do after? So I found it very confusing.
And that's really, it really like resolves
whole relationships with whole people down to like sex is quite a small part of a relationship.
Exactly.
Like it's such a, obviously like, you know, everyone wants to be having good sex and I hope that every listener is. Well, actually not everyone wants to have sex, but it doesn't actually, it's not the biggest part of a relationship. It can be the biggest part of a new relationship, sure.
Of course. And it's really important when you first meet somebody.
And it's important to feel connected to someone in a, you know, in that intimate way, if that's something that you want with your partner. But to reduce a whole relationship down to, oh, I know you're doing something different.
Yeah. And what do you do in bed? I think just, yeah, I found it difficult and challenging that other people can't seem to get their head around the fact that I've fallen in love with this person who happens to be a man. Oh, I've fallen in love with this person who happens to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And it's about people.
Yes. But I think that in 15 years' time, people will be like, oh, Anna was sort of ahead of her time by not using a label. Because I think that, you know, from listening to like listeners that get in touch to this podcast and chatting to people after shows, I think it's so much more flexible than we've traditionally thought.
100%. And do you not think that's what's going on with teens? So I mentor a teenager, a trans boy at school at the moment.
Oh, right, okay.
And when I talk to him, and it's lovely going in to see him, but when I talk to him about his friendship circle, he's all like, yeah, you know, so-and-so is in love with so-and-so. I mean, they're obviously the same gender. They're just in love with each other, but then they might swap next week. It's all, you know, yeah, so-and-so's trans. No, so-and-so's non-binary. It's absolutely normal for that generation.
Yeah.
And God, how wonderful. Thank God.
Yes, I agree. Now, I'm interested, when you... Because you mentioned Sue. I didn't know whether that was something... I know that you mentioned that you used to be with Sue, but I was wondering whether there was sort of, alongside your friends asking a lot of questions, was there like a media intrusion as well? Because Sue's famous.
Yes.
And, you know, you were famous too. You were someone that was on the telly. You had done stuff like Big Breakfast and Love Bites by that point. So you were... You'd done like the sex education show and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd done a lot for Channel 4, but Sue was very much more, you know...
She was Bake Off Sue.
Yeah, she was Bake Off Sue. So, you know, had reached a massive level in her
arguably
life.
Like, what, the most famous lesbian on telly in the UK?
Probably one of, with Sandy Toksvig.
With Sandy and Claire?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's sort of it.
Yeah, you know. She had a massive profile.
Yeah, huge. Yeah. Huge. And even... Now, today, I don't think there's any, you know, that you see frequently on television.
Yes.
Certainly, I know that I said this when I met Sue, but I was like, when I was growing up, it was really reassuring to see you on TV.
Yeah.
It's really reassuring to see you on Late Lunch.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, fine, we exist. Thank
exactly.
God for that.
Exactly.
But because Sue was this famous person and you were, they thought
working
you were straight
yes.
before. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And that sort of idea of like, you know, someone's been turned or something like that. Was there any of that? Like, did you have to like, were you seeing paparazzi and stuff like that?
There was a little bit there was a lot of media interest at the time. And there was a little bit of, you know, occasionally being shot by paps. Yeah, there was a lot of interest in our relationship and sort of still is, even though we're still really good friends. There's still a lot of interest around, you know, me and her and our relationship and our friendship.
Being in a relationship is wonderful for me. I love being in a relationship, but it's like, it's constantly juggling, isn't it? Like, you've both got careers, you've both got stuff on. And then to have like the added thing of like people being a bit nosy.
It's really, really, I mean, you must know this anyway, because you're very well known and obviously you're married and, you know, you talk about your wife. So you must... If you haven't already, you will be getting that media interest.
Yes,
and it's difficult. And especially if you've got a family.
Yes.
I think the most difficult... Actually, no, it was difficult when we first got together because, of course, I'd just split up with my partner of 18 years.
Yeah.
And he didn't deserve any of that sort of press intrusion and speculation and, you know, again, people finding it quite funny that we'd got together. And then equally, when Sue and I, our relationship ended... Yeah, my family were doorstepped, you know? And it's just like, who does that? And why is this so interesting? You know, so yeah, it has been difficult.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it feels like, as we mentioned earlier, there's that uncomfortable thing that I think happens to a lot of women when we first sort of realise that we might be attracted to other girls. You go, oh, there's sort of a titillation.
Yeah.
To this, that I, and it's about people that I have no sexual interest in. Like, it's like, you know, that those are the people that have it.
Yes.
Like men that being like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not. You're literally not involved. You couldn't be less involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was going to ask, like, what, the fact that you've been so, you know, on television, you're so open and you're so willing to, and as you say, like, you know, because of you growing up in this sort of very outward facing open house, do you think that people sometimes ask you too many questions because of your job, because you're
maybe
because you're paid to do that on the telly? But it's a different scenario when you're doing a documentary.
Yeah, well, so you think that that people ask me too many personal questions because I'm an open book?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm asking. I'm wondering whether that's the case.
Maybe.
Do you think?
And do you know what? Yes, and long may that reign, because actually, obviously, I protect certain areas of my private life.
Which we've all got to.
Absolutely. And I protect my family as much as I can as well. But I'm really happy to be an open person as much as I can. Because I think it's important to be authentic and to enable people to connect with you.
Yeah.
Because that's what our job is all about.
100%. Yeah,
you know,
totally.
We communicate. This is about connection. So that is really important to me.
And did you find when you first started doing stuff like that on television? So I'm thinking, so it was The Big Breakfast, and then you did that like Love Bites thing that was like a shoot off of it, wasn't it? Where you...
So just to,
is that
to, be,
right?
to be clear, on The Big Breakfast, I was never a presenter on The Big Breakfast.
Oh.
I was in production on Big Breakfast.
Oh, well then what were the clips that I saw of you doing an interview?
Oh, I on The Big Breakfast.
No, I just thought that was The Big Breakfast, but I don't massively remember.
It may well have been something else.
Right, okay.
But yeah, I mean, that's, do you know, this happens to me quite a lot, so I probably need to change my bio. But no, I worked on The Big Breakfast.
Right, okay, so you were...
In production.
Right, okay.
And then I flip-flopped into presenting, and I started doing, a show called Love Bites on ITV.
Yeah, okay, right.
Which was a sex and relationship show.
Oh, see, I misunderstood. I thought that was an offshoot of The Big Breakfast. Right, okay. But that was where you were interviewing people.
Do you know, okay, so I've done, so the way that, brief biog.
I love it.
The way that my career has gone is that I started on The Big Breakfast in production.
Yeah.
I then flip-flopped out of that into presenting, where I did a film series on ITV. I did Love Bites, which is a sex and relationship show.
Yeah.
I did various other things, actually, which I can't remember. And then quite a sort of catastrophic thing happened, whereby I interviewed Arnold Schwarzenegger. And all I can tell you is that I ended up suing him.
Yes, I did read a little bit about this.
So I then pretty much lost my career as a presenter for quite some time, and then managed to get back into television in production. And I was very, very lucky that I managed to go from presenting to then going back in as a producer.
So how long ago was this?
God, this must have been, I want to say, maybe sort of 2000. But I was out of work for quite some time, probably a good 18 months. I'd gone from being on TV, having a great career in television, to then having nothing and signing on and having that whole nightmare of people going, "Are you that girl that used to do?" And yes, can I just have my housing benefit? Yeah, okay, thanks. And I was so lucky that I managed to get back into production as a development producer.
Right.
And then created formats, things like You Are What You Eat.
Yes.
You know, stuff like that. Nowhere's Like Home. And then I worked my way up in production to exec level. So I was getting senior.
Yeah.
And I was going for commissioning editor jobs, which, you know, really wanted to do. And then I got asked to present again for Channel 4. So here I am, sort of 15 years later, as a presenter. So I flip-flopped.
Do you still produce?
I'm co-producing something at the moment, actually, for Channel 4. So yes, I keep my producer's hat on, and I like to keep that hat on.
And I bet that directors and producers love you for that.
I'm not sure about that.
Oh, really? Because I would have thought that would be like really useful that a presenter sort of gets the whole thing.
It should be useful. And I think if we were in America, then it would be...
Then it would be great. It'd be so good.
Great,
she's so good at getting it done. Just get the job done.
Triple threat. But over here, I still think that there is a suspicion of, in inverted commas, talent that can also know how to produce. So I think it's almost you're wearing too many hats. And we're a little bit behind the curve, I think, of the States. I think it's going to change because we've got the younger people coming up behind us who can do everything.
Yeah, who are making their own stuff all the time.
Of course, of course. So I think that's going to change, and I really hope it does, because actually we should be embracing talent and skill in all its forms.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the young people, they're terrifying. They really are.
Love them.
Of course.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You were saying before about sort of the press intrusion into yours and Sue's relationship and you leaving the other relationship. Was there a moment where you had to sort of come out publicly? Or was it like that had been done for you by a snap in the paper?
Yeah. So basically, I think the story first broke, of course, in the Daily Mail, I think. But you know what? I've never been forced out.
Yeah.
And I've never been ashamed of that.
No.
And actually, again, I have my parents to thank for this, and I guess because of our open background. But I rang my dad. My dad's not very well. My dad has dementia, and you know he's much older now.
Mm.
My mum, thank God, is in full fettle. But I very specifically, when I met Sue, rang my dad to say, "Look, Dad, I need to let you know that Charles and I have split up, and he was part of the family. This is my ex, and I need to let you know that I'm now with a girl. So I'm with Sue." And I just wanted to let you know that, before anybody else tells you. And my dad was so amazing. And he just went, "Well, darling, as long as you're happy, that's all I care about. And as long as she takes care of you and you take care of her, that's great." And I mean, for a man who's now 83.
Yes.
And comes from the church.
I think that's really important.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
And my mum was super, super, super supportive. So I'm very grateful to them both that there was no problem at home. With me saying I've fallen in love with a woman, it was more the rest of the world.
But also, if you're like, home is our, for lots of us, it's the foundations, isn't it? So if it's okay at home, then fuck the people that are going to give you shit.
Exactly.
Because you've got that sort of base.
And I've always had that confidence. My parents and my upbringing gave me that confidence to be able to go, "I don't give a fuck what you think. It's fine.
Brilliant.
I don't care about that. You so write what you like.
Yeah.
I've met somebody, I'm in a relationship with a girl, so what?"
And I think it's really important to share stories about, because we have people writing into the show and we've had people on the show who, have had a complex relationship with faith because of sort of outdated teachings or people, viewing one line in from the Bible a certain way. And I think it's really important to note that, because I actually went to a wedding at the weekend, and the priest, I've not been in a church for a while. It's my friend's wedding, and it's a straight wedding, but they were very clear that they have got lots of gay friends coming, and they really wanted to feel very open. And the vicar himself is gay. And there was he did a little speech before the service began where he said, "Before we begin, Maisie and Mike want me to share this, but also it's very important that I share this. I want you to know that you're very welcome here, whether you're religious or not, whether you follow a different religion, you're very welcome, whatever your gender identity, what your sexual identity is, I want you to know that you are very, very welcome here. And the doors are always open to you." And it was, I found it quite emotional actually.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I think that there are a lot of people like that, certainly within the Church of England. And I'm sure in the Catholic Church as well, just unfortunately a lot of their teachings are still feel very much in the past to me.
Mm.
But I think that's really an important message of saying, actually, I think people, you might assume people aren't as open-minded as they are because of something you heard at school or because of, something from growing up. But actually, I think that people are a lot more accepting than you think.
100%. I mean, I've always found, my own experience, as I say, I'm a very spiritual person, not necessarily religious, but my own experience of growing up within the church and still visiting lots of places of faith is that what we're talking about here is acceptance.
Yes.
And I've certainly always found an awful lot of the clergy or the rabbis or whoever, you know, spiritual leaders that I speak to are very, very accepting.
Mm.
Because ultimately, it's what we were talking about earlier. This is about connection.
Yes. And respect.
And respect. So I guess it's, you know, I'm interested in multi-faith and multi-identity, human acceptance and connection. So that's what I am drawn to. And I find an awful lot of places of faith do offer that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, before we go, I've got to ask you some questions about Naked Attraction.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know, I hope you don't mind. I hope you're not bored of talking about it.
Never.
Because people that follow my stand-up will know that I've talked about Naked Attraction just a little bit in one of my shows. But you are so brilliant at being so supportive to everyone on that show. I can't imagine someone doing it with more grace.
Thank you.
How could you do it?
What, go on it?
Yeah.
Not in a million years. I mean, could you
do it? No, absolutely not. No. Well, I mean, if you never saw my face, I'd probably be like, yeah, that's fine.
Would you?
Yeah, well, only because, no, actually, I've got some tattoos that peep that exes that might know away. About. Yeah, no, I don't have, I think it's brilliant that people do, but no, I find it, yeah, all a bit much.
Do you?
Yeah, I get quite embarrassed quite easily.
Do you?
Yeah, I really, I mean, I'm sort of blushing a little bit now. Yeah, if everyone had out their bits and bobs, I mean, I'd be like having a look because, you know, but I'm only human.
100%.
But I think I'd be quite embarrassed. Do you ever find yourself getting embarrassed? Does that not happen to you?
Never.
Because you've done a lot of shows where you've talked about sex education show, yeah, and then you've done this
right.
new one.
Yeah, so Naked Education.
Yes.
So sex education, Naked Education, Naked Attraction. There's a lot of nudity. I never get embarrassed about, I don't know what it is. Maybe,
yeah.
I think I must have seen at least 1,000 cocks.
I mean, and fair play.
I know. And, you know.
And I suppose after a while, you've seen 100, you've sort of seen all the different ways they come.
But that's
what, so I didn't mean to say that.
But also, you know, I've seen so many boobs and vulvas and,
yeah,
you know, and in fact, one of the most extreme things I've ever done and seen on the show, and I hope, you know, this is okay to say on the show, but we have this amazing trans woman on the show.
Hmm.
God, I can't remember her name, but she was extraordinary. She'd grown up as a Muslim boy and she was now a trans woman,
mm-hmm,
who'd been rejected by her family, mm, you know, for various yeah reasons. But she looked fantastic. And as she came off the studio floor, I said to her, listen, you know, I've got to ask you, right? Because she was really, really proud of her vulva.
Mm.
I said, I've really got to ask you, can I have a look? Right, because, you know, your surgeon's done an incredible job. And she's like, yeah, sure. So she takes me backstage. And she's like, take a look at this. Unbelievable to see what the surgeon has done,
yeah,
in terms of male to female trans. Extraordinary. Incredible.
And did she want to come on the show in like a ownership of her body, yeah, about being proud of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She wanted to come on to go, I'm a trans woman, I'm rocking it, I'm gorgeous, and I'm looking for sex and I'm looking for love and I'm really proud of who I am. And she looked amazing and was an amazing woman.
Mm.
So that was fun. But again, I mean, you know, with Naked Education, I talk about having worked with, in fact, he lives down in Brighton, a really amazing guy called Finn, who's a trans guy.
I think I know Finn.
You probably know Finn. So Finn the Invincible.
Works in schools, does stuff with kids, does stuff with charities.
Probably.
Right, okay, yeah.
Probably.
Okay.
But
anyway, go on.
But Finn is an incredible trans man.
Mm-hmm.
And he came onto Naked Education and went naked to show us all his journey, phalloplasty and all.
Oh, wow.
From having become, you know, having been a woman through to being a man.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a privilege to see that. To see somebody's phalloplasty and everything that they've been through, extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. So do I get the short answer? Do I get embarrassed? No, I'm curious.
Mm.
I'm intrigued by the biology.
And it's great, isn't it? Because there will be people at home feeling like, oh, am I different? Is of what I've got okay? Is this, and that?
And the answer is yes.
Yeah, because everyone comes in all shapes and sizes.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is it. So could I do the show? No, because I'm not that body confident, actually. But what I've learned from doing all of those shows is everything is perfectly normal.
Mm.
We're all normal and we worry so much.
Do you think doing the show has made you more body confident?
I think it's maybe made me more body accepting. But I don't know that I'm confident in my body just because I've struggled. I mean, I've written a lot of books on diet and exercise and all this kind of stuff. And I've always struggled with my own body and weight and that sort of identity, if you like. Mm. So I wouldn't say I'm body confident, but I'm certainly body accepting. And you know what? At 52, I'm really grateful that my body works fucking well.
Yeah.
And right? I'm happy for that. Happy for that.
The older you get, and you know, I'm a few years younger than you, but the older you get, the more you sort of realise like the marvel of your body, don't you? Do you know what I mean? Like when you go, oh, like yesterday I went for a swim in the sea, then today I went to yoga, and you know, the more different kinds of people that you meet in your life, the more you realise, you know, and I mean this of like people getting older, you watch your parents get older, you watch their bodies changing slightly, you know, I have friends with different abilities, you can sort of go, oh, like even if I don't like exactly this or that about myself, my God, how my body works is amazing. The fact that I can use it in this way.
The fact I can use it. Mm. The fact that I'm healthy. So again, for me as a woman, you know, going through menopause, going into my 50s, it's just a marvel for me that it's like, I'm really healthy. So yeah, I'm never going to look like Pamela Anderson, but actually I look pretty damn good for my age and my body works.
Yeah.
And you know, this age you focus more on preventing stuff for when you're older. Mm-hmm. So making sure you're strong for as you get older. And that's my focus.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you look great.
That's thank you.
Now I'm going to ask you the final question, which I ask absolutely everyone. And quite often it's a question about sort of a version of yourself before. So I'm actually thinking of the Anna that was dropped off at school.
Yeah.
With her big bag. It sounds like she needs a cuddle. I'd have given her a squeeze. If you could reach out, maybe someone that's listening to the show right now might be feeling that thing at the moment of going, okay, this is fight or flight. How am I going to get through this? What do I need to do? How can I rally inside of myself to get through this? Or if you could pick up one of those dream phones and call little tiny Anna and give her a few words of encouragement and support. We always like to end the show on a little bit of encouragement. What would you say?
Do you know what? If I could talk to my 10-year-old self, I would say, kid, you've always known where you're going, right? You've done everything right. You've done everything right. Everything that you've done is okay. And you've done everything right. So I would try and instill that confidence in anybody that it's all going to be okay. And whatever you choose in your path in life, that's all right. It's the right way that you were supposed to go. As long as, do you know what? I talked to my dad this weekend, and as I said earlier, he's not a well man at all. And his memory is really declining because of dementia. But I said, Dad, you know, what three things would you say to somebody about how to have a really good life? And he went, first of all, be considerate. Secondly, enjoy your life. Enjoy it. Live it and enjoy it. And thirdly, be generous. And I guess I've tried to live by those three things. So I'd probably instill in the 10-year-old me those three things and just say, it's all right, kid. You've done all right. You've done everything right because you've tried to be good and you've tried to be kind and you've tried to be considerate, I think.
No, you don't need to think. That's right. You've done it right. A perfect way to end the podcast and this series. Thank you so much for being my final guest of the series. I have loved this and I know my listeners will too. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
That was the brilliant Anna Richardson. Thank you so much to her for coming on the show. Thank you so much to everyone that's got in touch over this series. I can't believe that this is the 99th episode. It is really special to me that so many of you listen every week. It really means the world. If you want to get in touch, you always can. The email is hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. If you want to come and see me on tour, you can. I would love you to. I'm going all over the country and you can find out all the details at susieruffle.com. Please come along and wait around afterwards if you want to say hi. Okay, that's it for this series. Look after yourself and I will be back early autumn, let's say. Take care. Bye.